KO.
All right, dudes, what's up? Welcome back. We are revisiting some popular, trending, and fairly common fighting game topics today on Triple KO. I'm joined by Matt and Justin once again. And with all of the newer fighting games that have been announced, with all of the fighting games that are on the horizon and the ones that we have been playing over the past few years, a topic that we keep discussing is the fact that fighting games are changing. And there is a whole bunch of stuff that is going into gameplay, into character design, and into online innovations. And then we realize that's like kind of an interesting thing, how much fighting games are changing and what is being innovative in or innovated in current fighting games. And also how that applies to older ones, right? How the classic generation of fighting games from the 90s all the way till the 2000s did change quite a bit. So I gotta ask you guys, Justin, when you think of like big innovations in fighting games, what is the first thing that generally just comes to your mind?
Oh, I guess compared to like playing from back in the day, and we had bare bones training mode where we literally had to kind of like, let's say for Marvel's Capcom 2, right? For like, in order for you to like do some scenarios where you have to record, I used a rubber band to put it on my Dreamcast controller on second player and literally rubber band it to the up, down, back position so the computer can block for me. So I can actually test out proper guard breaks, proper mix-ups and everything like that. So now we obviously have a much more superior training mode in fighting games where we can actually record and play back. So I would say from that perspective, that's like a huge one because we never had that literally back in the day.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was me. My mind was the innovation because I did the rubber band thing. Like I was innovating training modes before anybody else.
You know, the struggle is real. I know a lot of people had their own tactic. They used like their foot, like their foot to hold it down back.
I did my foot.
But I was the rubber band guy.
You should have marketed that. You should have sold that in stores. Like help out with your training modes. That's dope.
Yeah, the Justin Wong rubber band. Buy it.
For me, of course, Soul Calibur 2 versus screen, pressing a button.
Oh,
screaming at each other. Well, like that's when you knew fighting games had changed and we were entering a bold new era. Had absolutely no gameplay impact, of course, but it threw your opponent like off their game. And now with Street Fighter 6 continuing that tradition with like ugly portraits. Hey, if someone you know is on Twitter and they're like, oh, I love wearing Crocs now, you can just take a picture of Luke and just making his weird face in the game face mode. And you can just bury them that way.
Yeah, I guess I should do that because I just recently bought a pair of Crocs. Super comfortable, by the way.
Right.
But yeah, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I think what Justin was mentioning on training mode is actually pretty fascinating because even we've talked about this a couple times before how like Killer Instinct was one of the first fighting games that actually gave you a proper training mode of some kind. And thinking back, it seems like such a common functionality of any kind of fighting game since like the mid 2000s. But yeah, like that era really didn't have a lot of that. You essentially were mitigated to just having a second player, if not an arcade version or something with somebody that's like, yo, bro, can you just like not play for me?
Yeah, exactly. Can you hold back for me? Like, I'm sorry.
Can you come over the house?
My Justin Wong elastic band broke. Can you come over and pull back on the controller? I'll give it back up to Eternal Champions. Because we discussed it a little while ago where I was like, damn, that had a super elaborate training mode before KI. But, you know, at the time, KI was the one that I knew that had a training mode. But Eternal Champion, I keep wanting to say Eternal Darkness for some reason. Eternal Champions, like, had a beat by, like, 2 years, something like that. But, like, no one really talked, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't light things on fire. Like, because of that game, it didn't see my training mode splurge. Maybe it was because of KI or I don't know where it came from. Really.
Probably because did Eternal Champions have like an arcade version?
It did not.
That's probably why. I think that game was pretty much relegated to like console games, where the larger fighting game scape really focused on arcade stuff and the console versions of arcade games.
Yeah.
So whether or not people are like what was the point of training mode back in the 90s? It wasn't to get good at the console game. It was to get good at the arcade game so that you can play the arcade game for hours on end and only put in 25 cents.
So any memories about what training mode had like the first dummy to like set behaviors on? Cause that's an altogether different like innovation within an innovation. I want to say maybe Virtual Fighter, like Virtual Fighter 3, something like that, but it has to be a 3D game, you know, couldn't have been a 2D game beforehand.
Yeah, I don't know. Like versus CPU is obviously like a normal functionality, but yeah, being able just to switch like a lot of that unique interaction stuff in a training mode setting, I don't know if that shows up until a bit later. I don't know if that really shows up until later down the lines of like Tekken 3 to maybe Tekken 4, Virtual Fighter 4, stuff like that.
Yeah,
I want to say Tekken 2 had training mode, but I feel like the PS1, like earlier fighting games, probably started for the majority of the time for like training mode stuff. I'm not sure about like any other game, but like obviously the ones that I really remember were the ones that we played on Dreamcast, like the Mario's Capcom, the Capcom versus SNK's, the Third Strike. But from PS1, I really feel like Tekken 2 had a lot, because Tekken 2 had a lot of like on the main menu there was a lot of scrolling down, so yeah. I want to say Tekken 2 for sure.
I remember a lot of scrolling down.
Training mode's like the big one that your mind initially goes to because it was relatively innovative, right? Like the whole idea behind a fighting game was that it was an arcade experience, and that experience of you being able to properly practice and get knowledge and information was something you literally had to spend money for. So dropping all the money, like dropping like the $50 to $90 that a game cost in the mid 90s was essentially your price for getting good at it to go to the arcade in many ways.
Yeah, so like if you just happen to, like the innovation was like getting your allowance and just getting a bunch of like quarters in your pocket so you can just waste on like trying to figure stuff out. Because I would do that in a local arcade. I'd be like, let me go to find some jank game no one plays anymore. At the time, I think it was KI2. And I would put two quarters in either side and just try out things, because I'd read stuff like on the off chance I'd go to an internet cafe. For those that don't know, the internet was only available in cafes for a long time. You'd have to like, you know, whatever, pay like $10. And I would print out like move lists and then go to the arcade with them, because like some guy is not going to let you fucking practice on him, even, you know, they're just strangers. So I would do that.
You get that. There's a very funny video game story we have all the time of classic video game knowledge and information, where some guy does some crazy cool thing against you and you're just like, how did you do that? And the bitch would look you just straight dead in the eye. Here's the arcade stick. He would go and then walk away.
That's good.
Oh my God.
That's all the information you got.
That's called swagger.
Yeah. For one of those stories I had, I was like a little kid and I asked him like, oh, like how did you pick Akuma in like an ST? And he wouldn't tell me. So there was a time where he was about to pick Akuma. I would stare at his controller and he started doing this. Like he was hiding, like it was like hiding his test. And I was like, really? You're not going to show me? Like, I can't even just look at your controller on how to pick Akuma.
You should have bit his arm, Justin. You should have bit his arm.
It was crazy because it was literally like, bro, I'm not telling you my secrets type of thing back in the day for sure.
For like my like kind of serious answer, when I researched for stuff for like worst fighting game or like what happened episodes, and you go back to those amazing Polygon articles about Street Fighter and oral history of like 6-button setup for a fighting game, even though you'd think it would be the reverse, like don't complicate your game with more buttons. But at the same time, it came at that right era where games were just getting a bit more complicated in terms of mechanics and stuff on the screen, and you needed a way to control all that. And Street Fighter 1's big dumb pressure sensitive buttons were like broke down. They had to go in for repairs because people were slamming it because there's no nuance there. And I couldn't remember who exactly at Capcom said, well, let's change it to 6 buttons because there is a 6 strengths spread out. So that one, obviously, because then everyone started to do it. And then, like, SNK kind of did the almost smarter thing. Let's kind of have that, but just two buttons less. But they're still like, you know, that's four is a lot still for an arcade game in the early 90s. So that was obviously a big deal. And that obviously led to more competitive play because everyone's getting into it, led to more quarters, which kind of really led to Street Fighter II's success from then on out. And then after that, of course, you have the big green 3D button on War Gods, which was a huge innovation at the time. No one can deny this. So. Sad.
I think that's adding more buttons is an interesting way of like you get more control, right? That that's an interesting take where that's now been the thing that follows Street Fighter forever, where Street Fighter is always going to be the six button fighting game, like almost whether you like it or not, until Street Fighter VI, which you could technically turn into a three button fighting game if you want.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, the only Street Fighter-esque things that didn't have six buttons is like versus games, obviously. But it makes sense for that, you know, considering all the new commands you can do in those games. But I was trying to think about like buttons in general, just like aside from that. I don't know if the block button is, I don't even know if that's an innovation. It's just a difference.
It is different.
Because it's not like it led to a new revolution of everyone ditched, you know, holding back to block. That didn't really happen like at all, but yeah. Obviously some like, I mean, Virtual Fighter, yeah, it obviously had it, and but it supplemented that by only having two attacks. Like, I don't know if this is controversial. I always hate block button in Mortal Kombat. I like want them to get rid of it so bad. I just want that injustice option. I just want it's that almost- as an option.
It's almost ingrained into the identity of Mortal Kombat in the same way that Street Fighter six buttons is ingrained into its.
Whereas Injustice is kind of like a newish thing, you know, like it.
Yeah,
so they could do
Injustice still is technically newish. It's only been two titles, and it's like, oh yeah, this is our back to block game.
Yeah,
yeah. But the crazy part about the block button is like, I personally am not a fan of the block button in general.
My boy,
but it's they've been it's more than NRS games now, right? They've been pushing the block button even to the current modern fighting games for like Granblue Fantasy, and even DNF Duel, right? Pretty much, and that's a crazy one that they added for DNF Duel, in my opinion, just because naturally the games that the developers made were usually buttons, like were usually when they use block, they always hold the direction of the joystick. You can do both, so they give you the option of both, but having a guard button is actually super interesting from their perspective.
I sort of appreciate what they do with it in DNF, where there's a draw, right? You can't, if you hold back to block, you essentially are manually blocking at that point, and you're rewarded for your skill. But if you hold the block button to block mix-ups, you can't tech throws.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, that's smart. That's the way you should do it, right? If you're essentially utilizing this thing and your character's just sitting there holding there, going up and down and trying to block shit, then you're sort of bound to place because you're holding down a block button, you can't move, and you can't tech throws.
Mm. Yeah, it's very Mortal Kombat-ish because like I don't know when they started doing it or it was always like that, but I know that in Mortal Kombat, if you hold down, like you don't get grabbed or whatever, but like if you block, you do get grabbed.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're just neutral or like down straight, down, you can't be grabbed in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, so I guess it's always been like that. So it's kind of that kind of reminds me of what you said about that
for a pretty long time.
From DNF Duel perspective, but like besides the guard button, I'm actually curious about this take. This take was super interesting because we all lived it and now we're living through it. This one is building meter. Now we cannot build meter on whiff normals. From back in the day, you're able to whiff your normals, just press the buttons and your meter bar will go up. Now in modern fighting games, there's no whiffing meter building at all.
Really nothing.
What do you guys think about that?
Well, now it's like, you know, now we're getting in this whole new territory of meter management in a lot of fighting games where your bar progressively recovers. You know, there's, I don't know if technically Granblue has it, but it's definitely in Mortal Kombat 11, DNF Duel, and Street Fighter 6.
Yeah, Granblue has it because it uses kind of like an MMO skill set where like if you use like your EX move, you can't use that move for a bit.
That one's cooldowns though, right?
Yeah, it's cooldowns.
Cooldown based. Yeah, I guess that technically still counts because Street Fighters, they're all technically cooldown based in some way, whether or not they're attached to individual skills or like a whole giant bar like MK11, DNF Duel, Street Fighter 6. But yep. it's like that. I'd say, yeah, like the classic way of doing things was what did you do in your neutral? Right. What would you do in the meantime in classic Capcom fighting games?
Yeah,
you're pretty much
chill.
Spamming normals,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Trying to get to your meter. And that's a big part of classic fighting games in general, just because meter systems weren't super thought out yet. They were sort of like early design. And now we've gotten to a point where it just recovers naturally, where it just like is going to give it to you and you're going to have it at the start. Right. And I've always kind of liked that. I got to say, I like the way Guilty Gear always handled things where we're going to take away all your bar at the end of every round, but you have to use it. You want to close out rounds by using it. I thought that was always kind of innovative in that way to make people play differently.
Even back in the day, like older games, I don't know. I wouldn't do that. Not because it was like an honor thing. I wouldn't spam buttons to gain meter in older games because I was just like, oh, they're going to hit me if I'm just throwing out random shit just to whiff. And I was kind of scared of it because I'm kind of a turtly player back in the day. I was just like, no, I just don't leave me alone. So I just thought if it throw like random buttons, I just, you know, didn't think it was worth it in the day. I'm fine with either, really. It's just one of those things that like, I mean, super meters in general, I've had a bit of trying to figure out when this really started. And a lot of people bring it back to like Art of Fighting, but it's still weird because in Art of Fighting, you have to build that meter up with like your taunt.
Yeah. It's like a little
very
It's like a chi charge, like King of Fighters, 94, 95.
Justin would know because you've been playing weird Art of Fighting games every so often.
It's a bad mechanic that they did. Like Art of Fighting 1 is probably one of the worst fighting games like I have ever played because I'm like, bro, like this whole key charge thing, and then like if the opponent taunts, the meter goes down by like 1/3. So and then when you're using your bar, the strength of your special, it's lessened. Like you get like a Dan fireball if you don't have enough key charge to throw that fireball.
Mental damage from a taunt.
It's a dying innovation.
You're describing like this element in fighting games that I like, which is doing chores, how some characters, their gimmicks have like chores that you have to do to build
tasks
up to some big thing. And that just sounds like just doing the dishes. You're like, oh, this sucks, man. Nobody's having any fun here.
Let's make an entire mechanic around that. Why don't we?
Yeah, it wasn't thought out pretty well in Art of Fighting 1, but it definitely got better in Art of Fighting 2 and Art of Fighting 3 for sure. But man, Art of Fighting 1 was tough to use, especially it just takes so long to activate. There's like delay in activating the key charge. Like it's not like Dragon Ball which is an unusable mechanic where we're just charging up and building bar. It comes out instantly, but in Art of Fighting 1 it comes out maybe like 3 seconds later.
But don't you also have to wait until you're like 25% health or less and have a full meter to do like a super a desperation attack? I can't remember if that's
it has to be like usually SNK games follow that flowchart where like you have to have like 25% health left for you to activate your super desperation super, and you have to have full bar, right? So like getting those like I guess like elements of like those I would say prerequisites down is pretty rough, but they do look cool as shit though. That's the best part,
and they do a lot of damage to sort of
Yeah, it's like 80%.
80%. Just, you know, cool 80%. Yeah. While I talk about Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters a lot, on the back of the box, it says the brand new innovation, the ultimate attack move. And it was different than like SNK games because it was a bar that you built up. I can't remember by whiffing, but certainly by like if your opponent blocks hits, it gives you more meter than if you actually connect, which is weird to me. But as you built that up, all it to activate that move is like both heavy strikes together.
Yeah,
so soon as you get that meter and filled it all up, it's blinking, it's flashing, all these lights are going off. Your opponent knows he's going to press that button, and that move dies if you don't use it. It's like a Def Jam Blazin'. After 5 seconds, it like goes back to like not full. So you have like 5 seconds to use it. So your opponent knows it's going to fucking come. But at the same time, they do a lot of damage and them have crazy hitboxes, whatever. But as a kid, I was always like, oh my God, this is so much better than Street Fighter. Street Fighters of the past. Tournament Fighters like forever, bro. And then the ultimate attack move is like what made me think that mostly.
Yeah, that's where like Super Turbo is kind of an interesting example. The first time Meter is introduced into a Capcom game where, you know, you build Meter in that game not by doing normals or if you block attacks and stuff like that, that's different. But you build Meter by doing specials. So jumping Tatsu with Ryu is super effective. You do like seven of them and suddenly you have a full bar. And in that game, when you get full bar for a lot of characters, like everything changes. Like you're suddenly a walking time bomb of like invincibility on wake up and stuff like that. Not every single character is that way, but like a lot are. Because some characters, like their wake up supers are awful, like Ken and stuff like that. But then they're really good, like Ryu, where it's like, geez, you just have to respect them now. So it's an interesting like push and pull that happens in fighting games when the meter is present, where it's like, I know they can do it, but just the fear that they can do it will make people play differently. And that's like kind of innovative, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, we're just gonna essentially install a character with this crazy ass ability, and we're either in some games gonna, like Matt said, take it away from you and you have to use it quickly, or you just have this thing now that's gonna make everyone that you fight against act different if they know what they're doing. And that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, like for Tournament Fighters, I think in the Genesis version, it handled it completely differently. I think it was like 25%. It went back to 25% health or less. And I think you could do it. And it was a complicated like command, whereas like in the Super Nintendo version, it was two buttons together. Just mash them and it'll just come out. No execution barrier. But for the Genesis one, it was like up, down, left, right. Like it wasn't even like a smooth motion. It was like something weird and bizarre, like a nuclear launch code.
It was the Konami code. That's what they're saying. but everyone plays that version of the SNES Turbine Fighters, especially with like the current community. I know that when somebody does have super in Turbine Fighters, it's pretty much checkmate. That's what literally everyone says, is like, oh yeah, if you have super, GG. Like you pretty much like it becomes like a 9-1 matchup in the person's favor, whoever has a super.
I think there's like one or two characters where the super does so little damage that it's not that big of a deal, like the girl Asuka or like one other character, I think. Like I mean it's good, it'll do some damage, but like it's you're not gonna have a guaranteed win or anything. It's funny because supers, it's like fighting games are always going to have that. Like that was always going to be an innovation that someone would eventually figure out. Like battles need to reach a climax. So there's something that needs to change to break up the flow of battle, but also looks cool. And here's this one, but it wasn't like Tournament Fighters was like, I knew I played it a bunch but it didn't seem like that big of a mechanic in terms of when I saw X-Men Children of the Atom. I first saw screenshots and saw that in the arcade, and I saw how fucking ridiculous supers were in that, how much of the screen real estate they took up. Like just Cyclops's blast was just, I was like, holy shit. Like when I first saw Children of the Atom, I thought graphically like, wow, I've never seen a game that looks like this. Cause I'd seen it well before Street Fighter Alpha, even though Street Fighter Alpha was like more known in arcades. Like you'd see it more often where I lived at least. So when I saw
supers are reserved in that game.
Yeah.
Nowadays, yeah. But back then I was like, wait, you mean Alpha or Children of the Atom?
In Alpha, supers are still like, they're just like not even a step above Super Turbo. They're just like bigger versions of fireballs, longer versions of Tatsus and stuff like that. There's like, they are flashy, but then you get to like the versus era where it's just like, the knob goes to 11 now.
Yeah.
Like, what is 11? It goes to 11. Shut the hell up.
Yep. The X-Men versus Street Fighter, when they first introduced that and Ryu just did the Shinko Duken in the demo mode, I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I'm like, this is some Dragon Ball Kamehameha type of thing. And I'm like, I am here for this. I think that's what made me love versus games.
An innovation. Yeah. I think having, cause that sort of predates combos. Cause that's like another one. Right. But like how big supers can be, and seeing Ryu and Cyclops jump on the screen at the same time and throw a super at the same time with each other, I was like, this is this is a gameplay thing that is making me lose my mind. This is the actual innovation, you know?
Yeah, and like it became the identity of like versus games for until now, basically, right? Yeah. Because like if you're gonna have superheroes into the mix, like you know, they have larger than life fights. That's why as a kid, I was like, well, how the hell is Ryu going to beat, you know, Hulk? Like, that makes no sense to me. So, of course, they had to pump up all these things. And that's why we got that. Like, if Capcom had teamed up with, like, instead of superheroes, serial mascots, we would not have the Versus series that we have today. You know, you're just throwing raisins from Raisin Bread. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they picked the only correct choice that other, like, because even if it was SNK at that time, like in 1996, it was SNK versus Capcom was then. Supers, like, and those games have comparatively, you know, reserved supers, like Max said, compared to, like, proper Versus games, like in Capcom versus SNK. Like, they're all cool and stuff, don't get me wrong, but, like, wasn't that big of a deal. Speaking of which, Grooves kind of, as much as we love them, didn't really go far beyond Capcom vs. SNK, Alpha 3, and I guess you could say the variations from MKX, maybe? I'm not sure if that's actually the same thing, but...
Yeah, I don't think many other games did anything with that.
No.
Custom moves is now a big thing in general for a lot of fighting games, of choosing which moves your characters have, but yeah, I think it's almost like locked to maybe those few and possibly a couple other obscure ones.
I mean,
it seemed like it would be a very popular idea where, like, you let the player choose what mechanic that you would want to have, right? And I thought the presentation was fantastic for it and everything, but I guess maybe in the end it just was a little bit too complicated.
It's daunting as shit to people that don't know what the hell's going on. Yeah. I still do not know what all the isms do in Alpha 3.
We talked about this a couple episodes.
Yeah, I know the busted blue one, and that's about it. And the other ones, I've never really delved into it.
Me neither.
Yeah, I mean, the busted blue one is all you really need to know, because that's what you only see for the most part. You don't really see the red one, which is ST mode. And you don't see the green one, which is kind of like the regular three bar. Like Alpha 2 and CVS 2 C Groove type of thing. Oh, I totally remembered another game that had the groove system, but you didn't really get to pick it. Capcom Fighting Jam. How can we forget about Capcom Fighting Jam?
You can easily.
But it was reverse groove system.
It was like, forced. Instead of giving you the options,
we're removing the options. That's definitely a way to do it, I guess.
I know. Imagine if it would be cool if you were able to choose, because I mean the bus. Everyone would probably chose Vism in general, because who wouldn't want to try to do a custom combo with a dinosaur, right? That's the kind of something I wanted to do.
No. No, you
no,
don't get to do
why
that.
Why not?
You don't get to do that. You get to play Red Earth, whatever that version is, that's what you're playing, and you just eat shit.
Unfortunately, yes. I guess that might have been the end of the grooves, technically.
Capcom side. I think when it comes to, like, the 90s era of innovation, and I said it before, the big one to me is combos. Like, there was a huge infatuation with combos in fighting games once they were, like, obviously, like, a glitch at the start in Street Fighter 2, but when they eventually became a thing, everything became hyper combo focused. And then a lot of games started introducing, after the Versus series, air combos. And I remember that being a big thing for me, was that, like, does this game have air combos? And all my friends and the people that I went to arcades, everyone wanted fighting games that had air combos. Like, that was the important thing that you needed now, because that was cool looking and crazy. And it's funny how combos, like, evolved, where you hit these big combo games, or relatively big combo games, and then you get Killer Instinct, which tries to shake things
the
up.
The entire game,
the whole game
combos,
is a combo game. Yeah.
But, like, even then, like, Mortal Kombat 3, bunch of, like, you know, new combo system, even, like, Primal Rage.
Whole thing in it is combos.
A lot of combos in that, and, like, it was, like, a thing that didn't last, like, far too long past the 90s, like, you know, once Capcom started making 3D fighters, well, I mean, Rival Schools had plenty of big, long, dumb combos. Rival Schools, speaking of which, teams, right? Just team-based games. Like, is there any particular team-based games you're like, that was a really cool team mechanic, how they handled it? Or is it still just teams are teams and, like, it doesn't really matter?
I guess for me, it was really busted, but the fact the Marvel's Capcom 1 with the dual combo thing, whatever you call it, where you can bring your second character in and you control both of them at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, that was fun.
I thought that was really cool. And they obviously brought that back on Marvel's Capcom Infinite, technically when you activate the Soul Stone, where you control both characters at once. So I thought that was really cool in a team-based game where you're like kind of like everything's just going crazy, just like how a Marvel versus game would be, where you're just controlling two characters at one time. It just kind of reminds me of like a dramatic battle type of vibe.
Yeah, that tag team element that the Versus series introduces is the thing that made me like love it so much, and still to this day it's like my favorite. The tag team element that you can essentially, it was it KOF like, where you have just a team of characters and you Pokemon style 1v1v1v1. No, like there's actively like there's two characters fighting two characters at any given time, and you can bring them in at will. Like you don't have to wait for them to die or anything like that. And I genuinely remember seeing Marvel versus Capcom 2 for the first time and seeing three characters on every team.
Yeah.
There's six fucking life bars like on the screen, dude. Like how many there's like five levels of meter and stuff. It's like, this is just absolute madness. Like, and you see eight characters. It feels like there's 30 fucking characters on screen at any given point, even though there's only like one assist and one main character. But still, it was so daunting and crazy. And it's like, no one will ever get good at this shit.
So like after 20 episodes of this podcast, I think we've talked about Marvel versus Capcom 30% of it, which is totally fine. But I think, and because I think I've said this before, it was like when I first saw Marvel 2, I thought this is this is as far as 2D fighting games can go in terms of craziness, in terms of just filling the screen with things like either be it characters, sprites, you know, special effects, blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking like, I might need to bow out of playing this stuff because this is too much for my head to literally take. So when Capcom versus SNK 2 came out, which around here was like a little bit later, like I was like, okay, this is fine. Yeah, there's grooves or whatever. I can get used to it, but it's like that's where my level is, because even though I like Marvel 2, I don't play it like plenty. I was just there's just too much going on. I don't know what half these people are doing to me. So
it's weird that it's the most complicated looking thing in the world and still is wildly considered to be the greatest fighting game of all time by casual players.
For sure.
I had to ask, when you were growing up and you're like so going crazy with Marvel's Capcom 2 and you're like so excited, like it's so sick that it's 3v3, did you ever thought like, man, at this rate, they're gonna do 4v4.
5v5.
I thought that. I was like, I can't wait for the 4v4 version.
Yeah, like somehow they're going to make it control like five characters on each team. Like in some way, I was always thinking that they were going to do some weird thing in the future where they would make assist type characters again and still have 3v3 and have assist type characters instead of just relegating your team members to assists. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like that always felt like that could be a possibility because Marvel 1, you know, was the only one to do that.
So I thought that because I'm on the main page of Madman's Cafe. Yo, what up? And I'll see those fake screenshots of Marvel versus Capcom 3 that has Thor in it on the main screen and has that weird logo. Well, it wasn't too weird. It looked pretty convincing at the time. I was like, oh yeah, it's coming.
Dante was in there too.
I think so. And when I saw those, I was like, yeah, they have to be adding another set of characters or it's like 4v4. Like it's not even a team anymore. It's like an army at that point. Like three
it's Avengers.
Yeah, Avengers versus X-Men or versus like, I think that's what I thought. I thought it'd be different factions. Like you had to like pick a faction. It was like, kind of like KOF teams. Like you'd be locked. You have to take Team Avengers, Team X-Men, Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, Team Hellfire Club. Yeah, you know, all that type of stuff. Like my mind was going crazy with all the possibilities that never happened, you know? Because Marvel got too popular at that point. They're like, who the fuck is Capcom? We don't need you anymore. Come like 2000, when the Ultimate line of comics hit and they started their comic business, started roaring back. And then the X-Men and Spider-Man movies, they're like, I don't even know Capcom. Well, who is she? I don't, doesn't fucking matter anymore. We got to make money off our movies. So I mentioned Rival Schools before, and I really think about it, like being able to switch out characters between rounds and your supers and team attacks vary depending on what your team is. was like something I wanted to see. Like, I get how it's much easier to do that type of stuff in 3D. You can't just make a bunch of crazy variations with sprites. It's like way more work. But I always, whenever I go back to Rival Schools and play Capcom, please make a Capcom 3D fighting collection. Please, asking for the seventh time now. That I go, this is so cool. Why can't, if Rival Schools couldn't continue, why couldn't this have continued somewhere else in like other franchise or whatever? Like, I mean, Virtual Fighter 3 Team Battle wasn't quite cutting it, you know?
Yeah, I think that that whole era of we want to do team stuff but not tag team stuff, where you get a bit later down the line, and even games like Dead or Alive eventually do very similar things where we're going to incorporate like multiple characters in certain ways, and then eventually it becomes tag team in some ways, you know, like there's a whole bunch of that kind of stuff permeating between the classic era of 3D fighting games, which is called team battles. And that's a mode that either you played or you just did not play, you know, it's like survival mode. So it's interesting to see how like they were trying to spice things up in certain ways. So let people at least make some decisions that you not really were making before.
Yeah. Cause when I played DOA 2 a bunch in the arcades, and you could, I'm not sure if it's said on the marquee or whatever, but I at least knew that if you took any two random characters, they're just going to get a bunch of preset, like not generic, but like, you know, pretty similar throws, versus if you get the actual canon teams like Tina and her dad, or I think it's Jan Li and Lei Fang or something, but I forget the exact whole team makeups, but they all had specific tag team throws. They're exclusive to that team, and I thought that was super sick at the time. And in DOA 2 specifically, because I know there's a little bit of this in DOA 1 where it had explosive floors, but all of the environmental interactions in DOA 2 where you're slamming people off temples and stuff, like DOA 2 was like 1999. And when I saw that shit for the first time, I was all about big, stupid, flashy environmental knockoff attacks where the, not like the Mortal Kombat pit things, but the fight continues in a lower stage. And I was like, oh my God. And I was kind of like, Tekken didn't do that until like maybe what? Tekken 4?
That was 4.
Yeah, Tekken 4. And that was horrible. That they did a horrible job.
It was different. It was different in Tekken 4.
So the story behind that is that the Tekken is a long-running series that just steals whatever the hell Virtual Fighter just did until like Tekken 5 and beyond, where they're actually like innovating and doing their own thing. But yeah, Tekken 4 just was like, oh yeah, weird 3D plane, you know, fighting where characters are clearly higher up and below each other, and there's like scale and scape and parking garages and walls, and that's all that Virtual Fighter 3 really, that was the big innovation for VF3, was like these interactive stages. So then you get some crazy funky things like two characters balancing in between boats that are going up and down at different perspectives, and you get characters on literal rooftops and shit like that in Virtual. Dude, Virtual Fighter 3 TB, I think, is no shit 1996, and it has the whole like knocking people off roofs and all this crazy shit, and it's ancient as fuck is what it is.
Well just Virtual Fighter 3 TB was the Dreamcast.
VF3 vanilla, the one that never made anything but arcade.
Because it blows my mind, because you're right, it came out in 96, and that blows my fucking mind. I was like, no, that's way too early. And it's like, ancient. No, Virtual Fighter 2 came out in 94. I'm like, oh my God, it was so ahead of its time. Like, it's stupid how good that looked in 94. Things look like shit in 94, like a lot of 3D stuff specifically.
I kid you not, Tekken 4, like, I remember, like, this one time in the arcade, like, literally everybody in the arcade just decided to, we're banning every stage except for Arena. Yeah. Right, because there was this one dude that was fighting in, like, I forgot what's the stage in particular, but it's like a white stage, and there's a bunch of walls, red carpet type of thing, and literally the guy is just, it's like standing behind a little wall. He's standing behind like a pillar, and the guy could not attack him because he's just sidestepping through the pillar, and you couldn't attack him, so he was just laming it out.
Because the movement's so weird and awkward in Tekken 4. So you can't get, like, as soon as somebody moves, you can react to the move and just turn the other direction.
But yep, see, that guy
was so bad.
That guy was smart because he was fighting. He was thinking fourth dimensionally right there.
He was. He was like, you know what? If this is real life, if I just hide behind the wall and you couldn't get to me, like, it should work like this in the game. That's... And he was right. And then you had that one stage that was like a Monster Hunter jungle stage where like the plane just like from up here to down here.
That's the
and
one.
And then like the worst part is like they didn't think about how, okay, if I do these moves, how do these moves work in these type of like scales? They just never thought about it. It just still went how it's supposed to go, straight. It didn't go downwards or upwards or like diagonals. It just went straight, so it just looked all weird.
Didn't in Virtual Fighter 3, to do all this 3D navigation, didn't they add, we were talking about this before we recorded, Max, I don't know if you remembered, didn't they add a fourth button to let you pressed it and then, or you held it and then you could move around three dimensionally? Or am I?
Yeah. I think it was punch, kick, guard, dodge. I think it's
dodge button. Yeah. So, I mean,
and
again,
it's just like
ripping off War Gods.
Sidestep.
Sorry. Yeah. They ripped off War Gods. I agree, Max. I love how stoic and stone faced he is. I'll just mention it. And he's not taking the bait, which is amazing. I applaud him every time. It's like, I can't get, like, Justin at least laughs. Max just sits there
because it comes out of nowhere, and I'm just like, "Oh yeah, okay."
No!" But he knows it's coming, though. That's the problem. That's the problem. He knows it's always on the tip of my tongue. So let's go back to Mortal Kombat a bit. Aside from the block button, do you think that there's anything like, let's say, in the 3D era or MK9 and 10? We talked about variations a little bit. Is there anything that you feel that sticks out that they did that kind of, you know, became the standard? Like maybe just violence? I don't know.
I mean, like the violence is one thing, right? And it's just like a presentation thing. But I think in terms of like actual innovation outside of just fighting game mechanics, digitized sprites was pretty huge. And the way that game managed its digitized sprites and the way Midway did it was pretty innovative, allowed for games like Killer Instinct to shine, allowed for Rareware and what they eventually would do with SGI like machines on Donkey Kong and shit like that was like the basis for that kind of stuff. And I don't really, at least to me, I don't remember digitized sprites being as big of a thing pre-Mortal Kombat.
I think there was like two games ever, because Pit Fighter came out like 1 year before it, but it was Pit Fighter. So
it looked rough.
It looked really rough because it was choppy as shit. Whereas Mortal Kombat, because the digitization process, I was just writing, I won't say what fighting game. There's a digitized fighting game that I'm writing a script about, and they had no idea how to go about digitization. So like, we need a background, right? And they buy a tan canvas, like the color tan. They're like, well, let's just have our friends jump around. We'll film them on a tan canvas. So try to mask out those images. And that's why that game looks so choppy. As for Pit Fighter, so why that looks so choppy, I don't know. Mortal Kombat was like not the first, but it was the one that like displayed them perfectly, like honed on it perfectly until like it just worked and it looked better. Something to do with it as well as the backgrounds, how the backgrounds look with digitized characters. It's always kind of dodgy because it can make the characters look worse in comparison. So that made it presentation wise stand out.
That's the thing why I think Mortal Kombat deserves innovation, because all the other digitized fighting games that you see, they look like shit, man. A lot of them look really bad. It's like they just don't know how to scale the characters, if not create the proper tone of art in the background to get colors to balance with each other. Mortal Kombat had a visual style that it didn't look like anything else when it came out. And I think that was pretty... It's funny is that was innovative at the time, and they literally kept that mentality and that style all the way until Mortal Kombat 11. We're just like, we want to create the most hyper realistic looking characters in some way in our games. And even throughout the 3D era, they were trying their best.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know. Trying their
best. They did. But they got there, right? That's the most important part. They got there. But I think another thing that they did a great job was that I was a huge fan of, and I think a lot of people were like, oh my God. It's just variations, like you mentioned, Matt. Like, I just love the fact that there was just like the game allowed you, okay, you can pick this character of Sub-Zero, and there's three versions of Sub-Zero that you can technically try out with different moves, different strategies, just different ways to just kind of play the character. And I just love that, because even the combos were also different as well too.
So it goes back a little bit back to the 3D games, where they kind of had a variation system where you had two fighting styles and a weapon style, and you could only do certain moves in certain things, like not like combos, but there's also like those weird power-up things you could do in Mortal Kombat Deadly Alliance. You did like a button combo and like they would get a like a power-up, and you could only do that, and you couldn't do that in weapon style, I think. Anyway, so it was so clunky, right? And everybody hated it. Not everyone hated it. I'm sure there's going to be people who are like, oh, I love the style branching combos. Yeah, listen,
there is a Discord community that plays that, you know, of course. Religiously, waiting for CEO to have an official tournament for Deadly Alliance. Okay, it's coming.
Right. And I'm sure they looked at that and they're like, there's an idea here. But how do we streamline this? Or how do we make it even more enticing? It's just have your character, but you can do all this different shit. And it's only in three things. It's like, we're talking about grooves, and there's like six grooves or eight grooves or how many, like three is just such a perfect number. You can see it on the screen, and it has a little animation, shows you what they're doing, gives you the list of all the special moves. It was so like perfectly presented to not make it confusing. And it's like, will they ever go back to variations? I don't know, but I want that again. Maybe it doesn't have to be in Mortal Kombat, but if there's been modern or more indie fighting games that have had like pretty much the exact same system, I would go back and play it. And I'm sure it's like, yeah, Someone's gonna go, oh, Grand Blue Fantasy does that. It's like, yeah, it's the one game I haven't touched.
No, it doesn't do that. One character, four moves, two supers. Yeah,
because I think it's eventually boiled down to it taking too much time. Like it feels like they put like a lot of time. They pretty much made three characters for every one character. Like for how you practically could have had all the Mortal Kombat ninjas on one character in MKX, where it's just like, yeah, you got Reptile, Sub-Zero, Scorpion as, you know, the Mortal Kombat ninja. But no, there's a Scorpion, there's a Reptile, there's an Ermac, there's a Sub-Zero, there's a Tremor, there's a Smoke. I mean, Smoke doesn't count because he's on one Tri-Bar, that actually has the three. Yeah. But those characters have their own three different complete unique versions of themselves. So they went the crazy extra mile to do that, which is makes a lot of sense why the follow-up games would sort of give you extra moves but not focus on their own individual play styles. And in Injustice 2 it was relatively throwaway, and in Mortal Kombat 11 it was half-baked. So yeah, it's unfortunate, but it'd have been nice if we felt like we were playing our own individual characters. But the same thing always happens, everyone always plays the best one.
Yeah,
that's true. There's like a few examples where like, you know, maybe like people want to play like something cool. I think the one character that I really enjoyed that with the variations of Mortal Kombat 10 was probably Jason. I love the fact that
there's
different variation. I love Jason. There's one Jason where he's just using the cleaver, and there's one where he just comes back to life like a Dark Phoenix style. There's one where he just like turns the screen red when he snaps his neck. It's like
the command grab
all three variations for him in particular were super good. And I think maybe the other DLC characters were probably the same way. I just think Mortal Kombat 10 just did it the best compared to Mortal Kombat 11, for example.
Yeah.
It's like me with Predator, or Matt knows this with Predator in that game. All three different versions of Predator are wildly different. One is clearly better than the others, but goddamn, are they all super fun.
Yeah.
Because it's better than doing it, like, let's specifically say a guest character that is from the movies or whatever it's from, and it has all these moves that it's displayed over the years of cinema. And if you didn't have the variant system, there is no way you're going to fit everything in. There's going to be someone that's going to be disappointed. Oh, they didn't get the plasma caster in, or like, you know, this disc. And no, like everything you could possibly do, with some exceptions, obviously. There's like 1,000 different Predators and they all have different weapons. But of the mainline movies, like, you know, it had pretty much everything you wanted. I wanted to ask Max about a game that is near and dear to his heart that might be the most innovative fighting game. And this is not a joke. Well, it kind of is, but it is called Street Fighter EX3. There is a moment where Max is reading all of the innovations that game does gameplay wise, all of its moves. Is there a particular one you remember or you're like, this is the best? Because it's still like my favorite video of yours where it's like 9 minutes of you going, this is the best game ever.
Dude, the team up ultras are super sick in that game. And it, like, there's a bunch of crazy shit where like you can do red fireballs and stuff and tag in off of them. Like there's a lot of like in the same, I think Street Fighter EX 3 is brilliantly innovative in the same ways that Killer Instinct 2 is,
right?
Where they're trying a lot of shit here. There was no mediation. They're just throwing the kitchen sink at game mechanics, but you got to appreciate some fighting games that do that every once in a while where it's like, you know what? We're not going to use 90% of these things, but it's fucking cool that it's there, man.
Just the quote on the box just says fuck it, like just put Critical Parade, you know?
Yeah, Critical Parade, what the shit.
I mean, you know one innovation that I wish was taken more seriously in fighting games is probably characters, like kind of like two characters in one. Kind of like how we talk about how like Chang and Choi was like a thing in CVS2 where they team up together, or like even like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in like Injustice 2. I would love kind of like those type of characters just to be in more fighting games where it's just kind of like just a combination where they all have a different mood. Like they work together to be one character.
So, so the other, we mentioned them last time. There's also Ferator and MKX.
Ferator.
Another one, I'm not sure if you know of, Justin, it's Noob Smoke. In Mortal Kombat Deception, they're Noob and Smoke just team up on two of their styles,
Really?
They have a completely different move set, and they come out for like I think tag throws or something like that. I think one of the throws like leads to the other jumping in, and it was a crazy thing at the time because when Deception came out, everyone's like, "What? Why? Like I've never seen anything like this in Mortal Kombat before." And there's like a story reason why or whatever, but you could just tag them in whenever you wanted. So they would jump in with an attack, but no one else worked like this in the game. Whenever they switched to a different style, nothing would happen. They would just switch to the different style. And it was a really cool thing, but it felt so strange. Like, and they didn't do it again until MKX. So it took a while.
That sounds kind of cool. Cause like I think the most recent one is probably Videl from Dragon Ball FighterZ. Where she can call a great Saiyaman as like part of her attacks and everything like that. But even then, that's not really as interactive as like Ferator before that one.
Armika like as well.
Oh, Ginyu? Yeah, Ginyu has.
Ginyu just has, uses like seven characters as special moves.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that's a good one too, Ginyu.
But I know, I see exactly what you mean. It's the reason why Yun and Yang, I've always been talking, like, I want them to be put into one character. Just merge them.
I think so.
You start as one or the other, and then the brother comes and helps out during stuff, or you could choose when that happens. Like that could be cool.
Yeah, I guess the most bare bones of it is probably CVS2, where he just does the super, Yun calls out
cinematic.
Yang, and that's it. But other than that, that's kind of whack. But it would be pretty cool, because I think before that, the closest thing is probably Street Fighter 3 New Generation, where you just press punch for Yun, kick for Yang in the character select screen. That's like probably it.
So when it comes to like big innovation, one thing I think that we got to mention is around the late 90s / early 2000s era, and it's with the Dreamcast. And it wasn't released here, but there were several fighting games that launched on the Dreamcast that had the very special subtitle for matching service. Yeah, and it wasn't just fighting games. It was actually several Capcom games, including Super Turbo, like Street Fighter 2 Turbo X, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, Vampire Savior, and I think even Puzzle Fighter might have had a for matching service. And that was quite literally a Japanese-only released Dreamcast online service where you can play those fighting games online in, like, the year 2000. So this is like some of the first, I don't think it's the actual first, but like some of the first like official releases of like wide scale, big popular games for online.
Oh, Max, I believe that would be Weapon Lord and on the X-Band service.
The X-Band, the third party services.
I'm actually curious on if the netcode for like, I guess the only Japan working service was good because... Man, Japan internet in terms of online fighting games right now is like 10 out of 10. So I'm just wondering how it was back in the day.
I don't know if they had broadband at the time. They might have, but I think the natural ability for a fighting game to run more effectively with the lack of distance probably benefited the games only being released in Japan, where you can only play with Japanese players. And they might not have been, they were probably not good, but they probably weren't the worst thing ever, even though it was ancient delay-based netcode, because distance is a big issue.
Yeah, for sure.
Were there any fighting games released on the Dreamcast in North America or even Europe that had online?
Fighting games? I don't think so.
So is it just Phantasy Star?
There was a quote unquote fighting game released even before that on the Sega Saturn with the Sega Channel, and it was Virtual On.
Really?
I think so. Yeah, let me actually look that up just to be sure. I know Sega Rally and Daytona, all those had network editions, they called them. I think Virtual On also had a network edition.
Because then if you go really far back, did the Sega Channel that you could access with the Genesis, like, did that have a fighting game released on it?
Maybe. Yeah, we might be able to go back all the way, and maybe VF2 or Mortal Kombat 2.
VF2.
Had
That'd be crazy.
So it was, on Saturn, it was called Virtual On Cyber Troopers Netlink Edition, and it actually had an American release.
I can't think of anything more greasy and sketchy than playing Virtua Fighter 2 on the Genesis on the Sega Channel. That's disgusting.
You really got to do. He's very desperate at that point.
Bro, I mean, if you live in maybe Wisconsin or a random state that has nobody or like no game store, no friends, everybody's into basketball, but not video games. You gotta do something.
Yeah, play Virtual Fighter 2 on the Genesis.
And the funny thing about the online part of fighting games at this era was that I distinctly remember the big premier fighting game that was about to drop in the US that was going to have online functionality that everyone was playing. The first one to me was Capcom versus SNK2 on the Xbox, the original Xbox.
It's up there.
Before we knew what netcode was, before we knew, all my impression of online gaming was essentially, Phantasy Star Online and some really basic LAN party stuff, right? So when I get that, I'm like, dude, we're not going to have to go to the arcade and spend money anymore. It's going to be like we have the arcades at our house, man. It's going to be amazing. And then, you actually learn what input delay is, and you're like, oh, God.
I still loved every second of it. Like, I would go over to my friend's house every weekend, and he would just want me just to rank up his account, right, and just play with it. So I would play against people like Jason Wilson and Flo, Alex Valle, just from New York to California, New York to Chicago and everything. And I didn't even care. I didn't even care about the lag. I was having so much fun night and day. And then, that was also the one with the P-Groove. And then because there was no rules for matchmaking, you would fight people with the cheating grooves, with the custom grooves where they have the EX everyone grooves. I would fight people like that. I would fight people like that, and they're in the top three, so I'm like, all right, I gotta overcome this somehow.
Everyone that was good was using some dank cheap shit. What the hell. And I think that carried over to Third Strike, also at the online, obviously on Xbox. But the big one we were all waiting for didn't end up happening, which was Marvel versus Capcom 2 got the online removed right before release. And we were hoping the PlayStation version, which came out later, might have online, because PlayStation had SOCOM at that point. It had a LAN adapter. Mm-hmm. It had the ability for you to actually play games online. It didn't. And I remember all my friends eventually on PS2 being like, Mortal Kombat, Deception, or Deadly Alliance, one of them.
It was either Deception or Armageddon, because I played Armageddon online on my PS2 with the fucking adapter. I could only ever get two games to work on my PS2 online. It was that and Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence had that online mode where you could be a snake versus a bunch of people. And for Armageddon, I remember booting it up and fighting someone's... Wait, could you take your created character online? I think you could, but I don't remember.
I would not be surprised.
But it was horse shit.
There were no rules.
There
was no rules back then.
Yeah. Especially when you used GameSpy fucking technology for your online. But I think I read that Deception did get like the Xbox, and maybe the Xbox version got online on Xbox Live, but it definitely had an Armageddon. It was rough. It was rougher than a badger's ass.
And that was the big part of Dead or Alive as well, like DOA.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if DOA 3 had online, but it might have. Like, a lot of those DOA-era fighting games, definitely the big draw of them was the fact that you could play online.
I have to check.
I know you could play DOA Volleyball. I played DOA Volleyball online. I remember
did you go to tournaments?
No, this is the Xbox Online world. Right? Like, you know, that game and this other fighting. I don't know if you call this a fighting game. I should have mentioned this the last episode. But you ever played Magic: The Gathering Battlegrounds on the original Xbox?
I've heard of it.
I think of that as a fighting game because it's not like you're using cards. You're actually using a character and you're like summoning shit and you're like hitting with your character as well too. So to me, that was like a fighting game, and I played a lot on the original Xbox as well too.
That's fair. I just booted up DOA 3 because people said, all of those DOA classic games are compatible on the Xbox Series X. And, you know, they got bumped up like resolutions and shit. I'm like, okay, let me go. I think I have an old disc of that lying around. So I popped in and it looks really nice. Like, I was like, damn, this looks still super good. But I can't remember if it had online or if that was a DOA Ultimate. No, wait, is DOA Ultimate just DOA 1 and 2?
Yeah, that's like remastered versions of the old Dead or Alives. Yeah.
That had online for sure because it was like a big back of the box feature. But I remember if vanilla DOA 3 had it or... You mentioned... Street Fighter and Capcom vs. SNK 2. Do you think there's like a zeitgeist fighting game that had online that really, really exploded it, like more towards the HD generation, like the Xbox 360 and PS3? Do you think there's like one where, okay, shit's now, we fighting games have to have online now because of this game?
There was definitely fighting games that came out before the one I was thinking of.
Right.
And I can tell you personally, the impression of fighting games just run like ass online carried pretty tried and true for like that Xbox/PS2 generation, almost like in tandem. And then we got to Xbox 360 and it was like, oh, Street Fighter's coming back. It's coming back in the form of like XBLA hyper fighting. And that ran like even more shit. Like it was so brutally bad online, man.
But people were hyped for it though.
I put in 3,000 matches.
Damn.
Yeah, same.
so I mean, but still, like, when you don't have any options and you don't have any perspective, it's like, I guess this is all we have. But the one that really made me like, online doesn't have to suck in fighting games, believe it or not, predates a lot of the bigger, newer generation, and it's Virtual Fighter 5. VF5 came out in like 2006.
On the 360.
On Xbox 360.
Yeah, because
it was like right, PS3 version had exclusivity for like a year-ish.
Yeah, that's
but it had no online.
So weird.
And then it was weird. And then the Xbox version comes out, it has online, and I start fighting people online, and I'm like, I'm not really getting a ton of the input delay, like the weird like lag that you get. This is weird. And then I would ask somebody, I would ask the dude, I'm like, because it's XBLA and everyone has that headset at the time, where are you playing from? And he's like, Britain. Like, whoa, this it feels great. He's like, yeah, it feels great to me too. And I would ask another guy, he's like playing from New Zealand. And I'm like, this is, dude, I've never had a fighting game run like this before. So I don't know what Wizardry Sega did in that time frame, but VF5 actually had the best online of any fighting game I had ever played at the time.
Have you ever tried Cross Tekken on the 360?
Oh, of course. I mean, I've made content for it for like 2 years.
Yeah, because to me, that online was so good.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, I was playing people from all over from South America every time, and it was like no lag. It was like, I'm like, damn, Capcom did a great job with this game in particular.
That was Capcom's first rollback netcode 3D fighting game.
Right.
Okay.
But the thing is, it was rough. Like, I don't know if you played the first week, but do you remember when it came out, the sound would desync and you would lose all sound? Because sound desync is a huge part of rollback issues, that you have to resync the sound. And they just, it was their first attempt at doing it in-house. So Cross Tekken had all these crazy online bugs. If you play the PS3 version, it runs like shit online. But similar to all those old era Capcom, early like Xbox 360 era Capcom games, the PS3 versions online suck and the Xbox 360 versions are okay. Like, because even Street Fighter 4, you have to give some credit. When that shit came out, ran pretty good online by all comparison. Yeah. Bitchin' netcode.
Yeah, it was pretty good too. And then which other game had really good online from the Capcom side? Mars Capcom 2. I mean, people up to this day still plays Mars Capcom 2. And the crazy part is people right now on the community, they prefer the PS3 netcode over the Xbox 360 netcode now.
I think it mostly is because the PS3 version is much more accessible. Yeah. You can actually get the PS3 version through to modding the system a bit easier than an Xbox can. Because in I don't know, throughout the me playing that game, that era of like HD Remix, Third Strike Online Edition, Darkstalkers, and MVC2 and MVC Origins, they all ran better on Xbox. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, that would make a lot of sense. There's more people on PS3. There's still a huge community of PS3 Marvel 2 players.
Yeah, like all the time. I know, like, they stream it all the time as well too. I think that's probably the only game that from the old side still plays using like that type of hardware, because I know like Third Strike Online Edition, like a lot of the Third Strike players say that that's the best Third Strike that has ever been produced outside the arcade. So it's either people play that version or they play on Fightcade. So those are the only two ones.
Mm. Absolutely. And that's a big thing is like, oh man, are we going to be able to get the arcade experience at home in some way? And online fighting games were the beginning of that, and we wouldn't really see the fruition of it until technically HD Remix, when first generation rollback netcode started actually hitting the console games.
So that's what I was going to say, is that HD Remix, since it came out like a couple months before Street Fighter 4 did for the home, that was the one where I was like, okay, I have my 360 at that point, because I got it a little late. I got like 2007. And when HD Remix came out, I was like, okay, yeah, playing online. Like, it was the first, this is the point of this game, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone's in college at this point. No one's like really close together. And like, that's the way you played. And my friend Rocky lived like up north, like in a village, like in a frozen part of Canada. And like, it was the only way we could play. And I remember, it was a little shaky, obviously, but we were still able to play, which is amazing to me. I was like, okay, this is a big step up from Mortal Kombat Armageddon on the PS2. There's one other thing that popped in my head. 8-way running in Soul Calibur clicked so hard for me, where when I played any other 3D game, I was like, this sucks.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that.
They had any sort of 3D movement or like, you know, double tap up or down to like weave it back or just a button. There was just something about Soul Calibur where I was like, holy shit, I don't want my 3D fighting game to control anything differently than this, because it just feels so natural. And here's how all these attacks work off it. I'm not sure if there's another game that quite has a style of movement like that, like a 3D fighter that has it, or if I forget. But
even the Sega ones, like you start getting to the Rumble Bronx or whatever those are, like all those games don't really have it. They have virtual fighter style movement.
If anything, Rumble there's Bronx. The only one I could think of is randomly Heihachi in Tekken 5 has an 8-way run, but it's a command, right? So in his little baby underwear diaper, you could do his command, and he literally just runs in an 8-way direction all the way back to the corner.
He learned it from when he was in Soul Calibur 2.
Okay, he just remembered.
If you wanted to experience what Tekken would be like with proper 8-way running, just fire up Soul Calibur 2 and see what Heihachi does when he's zipping around all over the place.
It's pretty funny when you think about it. Like anything that stands out from Soul Calibur in general, like just the Soul series in general, that's like stands as an innovation, because it's like it was just good. You know, but I'm not sure, because we've talked about all of its cool, awesome single player content in like a previous episode. So maybe that stuff is sort of discounted. But
I mean, we could talk about how it innovated by ruining the arcade experience. It definitely did, man. Like, so, if there was one game that was like, oh my God, like, why am I going to the arcades anymore? Yeah. It was Soul Calibur. It was like, oh wow, we have eclipsed the arcade experience. The whole novelty of like, we're getting a premium video game like moment here, where I am paying 50 cents to a dollar to experience gaming at its highest fidelity and quality, which was arcades. And that was gone when you played Soul Calibur 1. Then it was like, oh, there's nothing looks as good as this.
Then it looked like shit when you go back to the arcade, because the Dreamcast version looked like a way better. The only negative that I miss from is like, oh, I don't get all the weird cast of businessmen that would like be in the arcade playing Soul Calibur, because at lunchtime it was like in the financial district, it was close to it, so all these old fat dudes that were like high rollers in like the financial district would come in and just beast on Soul Calibur. There was like a guy with like a cowboy hat, I remember him specifically. There's a dude whose face was super red, and like, you don't get that at home, but I guess that's the only thing you're not getting, because everything else is so much better.
I really got to figure out what emulation that Soul Calibur 1 and Tekken Tag Tournament Arcade run on, just to show people what those games actually look like, because everyone's got this weird like revisionist memory of like Soul Calibur and Tekken Tag and arcades were so good. I'm like, dude, they ran on like PS1s. They were not. It was not good. I have to like figure out how I can get those on stream.
Oh, I'll send you a link, because I know a Discord that does like the PS3 stuff for like emulation and everything. So that's how I play Tekken Tag. But I would say for me, the thing that stood out for me for Soul Calibur, but it just was never innovative in actual fighting games, but it became innovative into platformers, was directional influence. When you're getting juggled in Soul Calibur, if you hold a direction, your character just kind of floats and tilts towards that direction. So the combos technically does not really work in Soul Calibur in training mode, because people can control where their characters want to move and fall. And that's a huge thing in current platform fighting games, where directional influence will take your character from like left to right to up and down. So I would say Soul Calibur probably had like the bare bones of directional influence.
Yeah, because it took away from like the Tekken system, because Tekken was all about juggles, you know, and there was really no way out of it. And Soul Calibur is like, well, if we get these characters with these giant ass swords and shit, you're obviously going to keep juggling people ad nauseum nonstop. We have to create a solution for this shit. And yeah, it's like manipulate gravity, wiggle out of it, and you can like move left or right or anything like that. It was a really good idea.
Visually, there's a game that I remember, or a series, and it's kind of a good time to talk about it since it's getting like a re-release. Is that when I first saw screenshots of the Rumblefish, and I didn't understand what it was looking at. I was like, it's 3D? What is it? And just 3D characters in a 3D stage locked on a 2D plane was like, maybe there's something that came before it, that's something obscure. But when I first saw it, I was like, oh, yeah. Why the fuck did it take so long to someone to do this? Because everything else was... you know, like some type of hybrid or whatever. Like the Rival Schools is a 3D game. Like, I wouldn't categorize it as a 2D one.
Did Rumblefish have 3D hitboxes as well? Or was it technically the first 2.5D?
For 3D hitboxes, I don't know for sure.
No, I think it was the first 2.5D.
Yeah, I'm assuming that like that would have been very forward thinking.
Yeah.
It was either Aiding or Dimps. I think it would have been Dimps.
I think it's Dimps
that made Rumblefish. Yeah, if they were the first ones to do 2.5D, because that's interesting, because they would later make Street Fighter 4. The solution to that game feeling like shit in its alpha phases was to essentially flatten the gameplay, where we have 3D characters and we're going to flatten the gameplay. Because that's the next one I would mention is like a big innovator outside of like the netcode thing. Yeah, Street Fighter 4 with 2.5D gameplay.
Yeah, like
Rumblefish predates that, maybe.
So Rumblefish is supposed to, the first two games are supposed to get a re-release later this year, maybe next year, but I don't know a whole lot of details about it, but maybe they'll talk about it there, or maybe there'll be something in the training mode or the options like kind of like illuminate that, because I don't know for sure, but it was so early. That game was like what, like 2002?
It was around the mid-2000s.
Yeah. Like that? Okay.
So I remember playing Rumblefish 2 when it was in Japan in 2005. So Rumblefish 1 probably like 2002, 2003.
And you forced like Chinatown Fair to get like a cabinet, and
I'm glad you remember the story.
And it made like negative money.
But listen, think about this.
Yes.
When you see all the people on Twitter hype about Rumblefish 2,
it's you.
Myself, it's Yipes, it's everybody from the New York City Chinatown Fair Arcade, because they knew how special this game was in Chinatown Fair, even if it didn't do that well financially from the arcade. I'm sorry, Chinatown Fair, but We did it for this future of 2022, where now Rumblefish 1 and 2 is coming back out on console, and I'm here all for it.
For the culture. There's a canceled fighting game that I know of that has the single worst innovation I can think of, where it's like, this isn't it, bro. It was Yu Suzuki in the mid-2000s is like, I'm going to make a touchscreen-only fighting game for the arcades.
Wait, what?
I believe it was called Sci-Fi. It was like PSY. Max is about to look
Sci-Fi.
It up.
Sci-Fi?
It was like PSY, like dash, like PHI or something like that. And it was like a big screen. And on the top, left, right, and bottom, there were like, that's where you move. So you have to press left and right. And guess what? It was canceled because people played it in like in a test environment. Everyone's like, oh no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get these dudes that are like truly innovative, and then sometimes they get a little too innovative. It's like, okay, yeah, you have to push some borders every once in a while. I get it. And they're not all going to stick the landing.
I mean, is it failed though? Because I feel like now with VR as a new platform, they're making so many of these random VR fighting games or VR type of games where there is a 1v1 element. So maybe the guy was just super ahead of its time.
Yeah, but when you're so ahead of your time that you get canceled, that means you're like that you're not even ahead of your time at that point. If it had come out, then people can look at it and go, oh, look at that. Justin Wong says it was ahead of its time. Well, yeah, because you get to play it and try it, but when it never really came out, it got super, super canceled. Like, yeah, it's not the, because it's like, I made Virtua Fighter. Like, what's next?
Yeah.
Like, and
most innovative shit ever. Yeah.
You know, when you say it now, like we kind of skipped over a little bit. That was the first, maybe there's some obscure, like really ugly polygonal thing on the PC released. I think there might be some precedent for that, but like Virtua Fighter really, and all my, like when I go back and research old fighting games and stuff and for videos or whatever, I'll always almost find an old magazine scan where someone's freaking out like, it's first 3D fighter. Oh my God. Like it looks so amazing because it's like, it could have probably looked even better, but they wanted to keep the virtual aesthetic. Like maybe polygons could have been like slightly look a little better because they look so much better in VF2. But
I think even VF2 might have been one of the first games to have textured polygons.
Maybe,
yeah, like
maybe.
Crazy shit. Like if we want to talk about the fighting game series that tried and tried again, especially considering the time it came out and how fast the games were coming out, always did something crazy innovative, either in visuals, presentation, or gameplay. It was technically Virtua Fighter. And one that really wasn't innovative was technically Final Showdown. Or I'm sorry, Ultimate Showdown, the latest one that came out.
Yeah.
Where it's just essentially a re-release of our crazy innovative game from the mid-fucking-2000s. So if there's one thing that gives like innovation award, I think it technically goes to VF, because it also was responsible for some of the best online and fighting game I had ever played when it first came out in VF5. But what you said about Rumblefish got me thinking how Rumblefish was also one of the first cel-shaded fighting games I remember ever seeing. And that also boils down to something that I think is truly innovative and has sparked the industry drastically, and was Guilty Gear Xrd. Guilty Gear Xrd's visual style was ridiculously innovative, and we almost take it for granted now because of that's the Arc System Works style of like making games. But that process that they went through to create characters to look like proper 2D sprite work characters and 3D models playing on a 2D gameplay, the moment when I saw that Xrd trailer and the camera spun around Kai and Saul B and Simmons were just like, what the absolute fuck is going on? What are we looking at? Like it was one of those big video game like fighting game moments where it's like, oh my God, nothing will be the same after this.
Yeah, because now we have legions of people that just say, let Arxis do it. Why can't it look like what Arxis does? And while it looks great and all that, you're right in saying that's innovative, because it's led to this point where people are like, just let them do it. Oh, I hate the way Street Fighter 6 looks. Why couldn't they just let Arxis do it? And yeah, you do get burned out reading those critical comments, but that just means that's how good it was. That's how, like, visually speaking, Xrd just kind of blew things up. And now that's all Arxis kind of does. A little variance in between, obviously. But visually, it was... And I'd say like all the other stuff that version of Guilty Gear kind of did with like single player content. We didn't talk about it too much on the single player content video, how like, you know, the visual novel style of thing was a big stepping stone for us. See, a lot of people want to get into Guilty Gear lore and stuff. Well, look, just there's a visual novel. You barely have to play a game, basically. So it kind of got people into the stories easily.
That's ultimately why I don't like it. It's like, it's not a video game. Yeah, man. Yeah, you're watching an anime. So
that's fair.
The most interactive thing is just pressing A.
That's the Arxis way. Because just to go through DNF duels, you just press A to get through most of it. So,
bro, I'm not fighting things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not trying to read through the whole visual novel. Give me my secret character, bro. I'll mash A all day.
Justin Wong, mash A all day.
We are waiting for the Dark Souls of fighting games. Let us have it. We're ready.
Soul Edge has nothing on a lightsaber. Like, I'm sorry.
James Earl Jones comes back.
No.
Oh, no. Oh.
I don't think kids trade games anymore. I need that sense of accomplishment, and it wasn't there. And I think that was a major flaw.
The way they engineer these is just phenomenal.
As much as you're into like the comics, I was very into the toys. So I was on like the message board all the time. Yeah.